welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. So this channel is quite close to my heart because I train coaches in embodiment. I mean, why? Because if you don't work with the body, you're missing a lot, whether you're a coach, a therapist, facilitator, whatever. That's how you go deep quickly. That's how you do stuff that's sticky. We have to take the body into account. This channel is sponsored by Dylan Newcombe and Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Dylan is a genius, quite simply put, and I wouldn't say that about many people in this field. I've been studying with Dylan for, God, the first time was probably 10 years ago in the Netherlands. Speaks fluent Dutch, by the way, as well as Korean and a few other languages. What I love about Dylan is his ability to make models of things, looking at how embodiment works. His system, Uzazu, U-Z-A-Z-U, is really all about state shifting. So I think of him as the sort of master of state changing, how we can shift our state, our client's state, and how we can develop ourselves through those different ways of being. So I think for coaches and therapists, it's like easy to learn, practical toolkit. I've used it myself over the years. So if you want a 3-day online training with Dylan, then look at the link below, or you can go to Uzazu, uzazu.org. And even easier, he's got an embodied assessment there you can do as well. We all love doing these little tests about ourselves, but this is an embodied one. So there you go. Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. I'm going to be on this one a lot just because there's lots of cool people on here. Lots of people, I think, you know, well worth a listen. Embodiment in facilitation is so necessary. So from me to you, welcome.
The topic of this 50-minute talk is embodying emotion as a way to quicken outcomes and shorten treatment times in all therapies and in daily life. Yeah. Briefly about myself, I'm a licensed clinical psychologist in California. I'm at the moment, in Cologne, Germany. Yeah. Where the pandemic is a little less intense than in California, in Los Angeles. I'm a senior trainer in Dr. Peter Levine's Somatic Experiencing, or SE, professional trauma training programs. And I'm also the developer of Integral Somatic Psychology, or ISP. And the website is www.integralsomaticpsychology.com. So I would like to begin with the question of what is embodiment? We are at an embodiment conference, and there are so many topics in relation to embodiment. You know, yoga and embodiment, yeah, is one. Yeah, emotion and embodiment is another. There's so many of them, right? Energy and embodiment is another. So it's good to look at the definition of embodiment. Or the different ways in which we look at embodiment. I look at it, it's my way of looking at it, a comprehensive way of looking at it, is that embodiment can be defined in terms of this body that I have that is going to go into a coffin at the end of my life, yeah? In relation to this body of mine. So in relation to the physical body, that's what it's called in the Western, it's called the gross body in the East for different reasons. So embodiment of cognition is a very interesting and new topic in cognitive neuroscience. How is body involved in cognition? And how to use the body to improve cognition? In the same way, embodied emotion. How is the body involved in emotion and how to increase the role of the body and remove hindrances to the role of the body in emotion, behavior, and so on, yeah? There's also the idea that embodiment is really about embodying the subtle energy of who I am in some systems, yeah? I'm not just my physical body, I have another body, soul, religions call it. How to embody that energy in my physical body. It's all with reference to the physical body, right? So how do I embody myself, the sense of self in my body? I can define myself in so many different ways through my autobiography and so on, but can I define myself in relation, self in relation to the body? In fact, neurologist Damasio talks about sense of self as arising in the body. You know, as the body's going through different experiences, there's a hum of all these experiences, like a traffic from a busy highway in a distance. It sounds like one sound. That's what Damasio says, the sense of self. And you know, the East also agrees, it's a construction. So that's in relation to the body. And how do you make it more stable? So there's a field of inquiry there. Then embodying the relationship to others, that's one topic I see also in the conference. How do you embody your relationship to others? How do you make it more just? How do you recognize that my relationship to others through the body is unjust, right? And the relationship to the environment, the idea is that if I'm really related to my body, the environment through my body, I would not be as damaging to the environment if I'm not living in my brain. Yeah. And then of course, God. Some people define God as everything around us and including us. So how is my body relating to the world at large can also be defined spiritually as a relationship to God. Yeah. So now embodiment can also be defined as in relation to awareness of self, the awareness I have. This is an interesting thing. It's more in the spiritual traditions. So my awareness of self stuck in the body, limited to the body? That is the spiritual problem on the path to enlightenment that we defined ourself as the body. By limiting our unlimited awareness to the body and create misery. So on the enlightenment path, the only way you can really be happy in a sustained basis is to become enlightened. Otherwise, you'll go through multiple lives going between misery and happiness, with misery dominating the mix. So then the goal here, embodiment means to increase your awareness to more and more of the universe, to have as your body the whole universe. That's different kind of, you know, it's like, you know, in the first type of embodiment, the physical body, bring everything into my body or relate everything out there through my body. That's one type of embodiment. The other type of embodiment is, hey, make your body bigger by expanding the awareness that's stuck to your physical body, which is created by nature, but you have the capacity as a human being to reflect on it, to get out of that. That's what people do on the path of enlightenment. So, you know, so you go from I'm my physical body, I'm not. I'm an energy body, I'm not. You know, I'm the body of the universe. Then what? I'm not. Then who are you? Right? Who are you? It turns out, on the enlightenment path, there is a body of absolute, unchanging, pure awareness that's complete in itself. And that's who you are. And that's this awareness in yourself is the seed of that. So it's a matter of expanding that, doing whatever you need to do, practice you need to do to become, to identify with the absolute in which everything is there. Everything is changing, but nothing really affects you because it's an absolute basis. And that's the mystery of creation. So what kind of embodiment are we talking about? So that's the thing. It's not just about sensing my body through sensations. It's about are you making greater use of your body for cognition, emotion, behavior, energy, self, etc.? Or are you trying to expand your awareness? Away, you know, include your awareness of the body and then expand and get as big as you can. So these are the different dimensions of embodiment from my perspective. And what I'm going to offer and show you that embodying emotion is central to embodying all of the above dimensions of embodiment, to improve cognition, to improve emotion, behavior, energy, self, relationship to others, to the environment, to God, also to, you know, make your awareness free so that it can go beyond your body, beyond the bodies around you, beyond God, so to speak, because God is a concept that is changing all the time. the universe, and find yourself as the absolute unchanging awareness. So these are the, so embodying emotion is central to embodying whichever way you're choosing to go toward embodiment. Embodying emotion can give you that, and that's what I'm going to talk about, the theory of it, and you know, the theory of it, you know, in science and philosophy and so on. And perhaps we'll have a little bit of time to perhaps even do a little exercise, because we all always have emotions, even now. We are never without emotion. If you broaden the concept of emotion, definition of emotion, we are never without emotion. Because what is emotion? Emotion is the impact the situation is having on us, right? For example, as I was preparing, brushing my teeth for this presentation, I said, what if I don't find the link? God forbid, right? And the emails I have, I'm creating a situation and immediately not feeling good about it, right? Feeling a bit anxious. So that's a scenario. Then I get on, then I come online, and then I'm not able to see myself. That also makes me panic in relation to this situation. What if I cannot get in? So we are always generating emotions in relation to specific situations. And it doesn't have to be happiness or sadness. It can be just feeling bad or feeling good. That's good enough as an emotion. So we always have an emotion. It's the impact of any situation we can think of that has on our well-being. I either feel good or bad. And that's what emotion is. So when you have emotion, if you embody it, then that you can, you know, you can improve cognition, emotion, etc., behavior on the one hand, but also you can generate the ability to free your awareness from being stuck to this body and imagining this to be the body, right? This to be the body when you're not. You're the eternal, unchanging, pure awareness that you are. So for that, we need emotional embodiment, because emotional, the ability to tolerate opposites in a body, the most limited body that we have here, right, is a qualification for going on the path of enlightenment. You know, I'll give an example. I nearly died in my birth, my cranium got crushed and so on, and I nearly, came close to cerebral palsy. So when I meditate, you know what happens? As my energy starts to expand, this area gets tight and my awareness is stuck there. It's only when I go in there and find the terror, find the fragmentation, and find a way to embody it, whatever that means, we'll define it. Then my third chakra can open and my awareness goes beyond the body. Then I know that I'm not just this body. You know, it's a strange thing to be talking about at an embodiment conference, but depends on what your perspective of embodiment is, right? So what is embodiment? Let's look at what is embodied. What is it to embody emotion, right? What is this? So I will come back to that. To embody emotion is to tolerate, to have a capacity to tolerate emotional experiences in the most limited body we have, right? How does one develop a capacity for emotion? To have an emotion, we need to support an emotion within ourselves. We need somebody else to support it, right? To the extent to which we cannot support it in ourselves. And three, we need to expand the body to experience the emotion in as much of the body as possible. Why is that? That is because an emotion is an impact on your well-being. On what is well-being? The way the body feels. So if you're trying to limit your experience of emotion to the chest, or the, let's say, grief to the chest or the lung, guess what's going to happen? It's going to become quite unbearable there. Then what we tend to do is we try to shut every in other places in the body to minimize the emotion because it feels bad, which actually paradoxically makes it even harder to process the emotion, harder to tolerate the emotion. A quick example is, you know, an emotion is an energy. So, and it's stimulating your body. Will it be more tolerable if it's all of the emotions stimulated one place in the body? This is from the energy psychology point of view. Or would it be better if it stimulated the body more evenly? A good example is it easier to lift a 50 kilogram bag with one arm or both arms? In fact, you can lift 60 kilograms with both arms with less strain to either arm than 50 kilograms with one arm. And that is the kind of example I give to my students and trainees. And when they experience it, they know. They go, well, I was afraid of the fear of dying. This is very common in coronavirus at times. People are afraid to die. They've had prior experiences of dying in pre-med and perinatal trauma or some other physical abuse. Then once they expand the experience of dying to different parts of the body, right, to as much of the body as possible, they say, I can be with it. This is what an emotion is. That's interesting. And then the cognition and behavior in relation to the situation improves. That is interesting, right? We will look at why that is. So what is to embody emotion? To expand the emotion to as much of the body as possible. And when you do that, what happens? The capacity to develop it, to tolerate it and stay with the emotion, you know, for a longer period of time becomes possible. Yeah. And when you can be with it for a longer period of time, what happens? Your brain can process the emotion without acting out, right? And find better, think better about it, but also find good ways to deal with it. For example, if I have an eating disorder, if I can hold back the eating and sense the distress, which is an emotion, by expanding it, I can actually tolerate it more. My brain can process it more and realize what this is about is not food, but it's about hunger for contact. So I might think of calling a friend of mine and avoid myself overeating. So that's a simple example. It's a good example. So it's actually simple, right? It's relatively, the practice is simple, but it's so difficult because nobody, including me, wants to feel anything unpleasant. Positive emotions that are unacceptable are not as bad. You know, if I'm afraid of sexuality, it's because it brings up shame, then negative emotion, therefore I don't do it. But that's not as bad as having a negative emotion like anxiety from trauma, you know, expanding it to, you know, because we all bound by the pleasure principle of Sigmund Freud, innately, we don't want to feel bad. And therefore we need to understand that to expand the body, to expand the emotion. Then realize, hey, it doesn't feel as bad as I thought it was, right? When I work through my fragmentation, the body fragmentation, of course, I'm afraid. I don't want to go and do yoga and open up my body and feel that, but I know that it's there. That's why I'm behaving strangely with my wife. And when I do that, magical things happen. Dreams flourish. And suddenly I'm in a different space. I've individuated further. So the science of embodied cognition, emotion, and behavior is a general term I use in my book that will be coming out next year called Embodying Emotion, about the research streams of embodied cognition, inactive emotion, embedded cognition, and so on, which gives us actually some total of these findings lead us to the place where we... you know, I'll refer you to some articles. When you go to the website on the blog section, I've written a number of articles. You can read about the science of it in greater depth. But essentially, it supports the idea that when I expand the emotion in the body, in the situation, I develop a greater capacity for it. That's a given. And then what happens? My cognition and behavior in relation to the situation, I find myself in improves, which means that I will get a better chance, faster chance of generating a solution than when I'm pushing an emotion away, which is what we do all the time, right? So here is a very quick summary. Here is cognition, emotion, and behavior. It turns out that they're interrelated. You can't really separate them. You can only separate them when we symbolize them in the higher levels of the brain. But as an experience or energy in the body or the brain, they're unitary, which is one of the new findings in cognitive neuroscience. So you cannot really separate them. So they affect each other constantly, right? They depend on the brain, we know that. But that cognition depends emotion and behavior depend on the body we know. What are we going to do without involving the body? You know, if you want to say something, you have to involve the body. Emotion is that, is, you know, used to be limited to the brain, but now we know that as when we look at it as a assessment of the impact and a situation has on my whole body, then of course the body has to be involved in the generation of it. And that's what people like Damasio and Bud Craig are writing about, the new neuroscientist Bud Craig. And all of this, you know, I will have this PowerPoint be available to you, especially if you buy, I don't know whether it's available to people attending this webinar, but certainly when you buy the package, it'll be made available, right? And whether it's available to those people who are attending it, the PowerPoint, that would be great. If the organizers can make it available, that's fine. But at least you can take quick screenshots of, you know, the slides so that, you know, I'll go to the reference slide in the end and you can take a screenshot of it, you know? So all three depend on the brain, the body, and the environment. A child's bonding experience depends on the body of the mother, not just on its brain and the body, but also on the environment, the father, whether war is going or famine is going on and so on. So it's very clear, but cognitive science is just catching up to the idea that even my cognition depends on brain, body, and the environment. You know, there's so many ways, so many experiments that they have done. For example, whether when you go to a supermarket, somebody's from the Netherlands, there's a study there where when you choose a hand basket or a push cart, embodied cognition tells you who will end up buying more items: the person with the big cart, impulse items like chocolate at the checkout counter, you don't want to buy, you resist it all along, you pick it up. Who does that kind of impulse purchases? The person with the basket or the push cart? Guess what? One would think more space, more items. No. The person with the hand basket, because they're using the biceps muscle, which has a psychomotor function of bringing toward yourself what you want, you're engaging that. Push cart, you're pushing away the triceps muscle. So your cognition of wanting and not wanting is tied to the muscles that you're using, the push cart or the hand basket. So you end up buying a lot more in the hand basket when you have the hand basket. This might be an so there's so many ways in which the body's, you know, involved in cognition. So that is a little harder for people, but it is true. So what happens if I have an unpleasant emotional experience? Right, either because I'm thinking about something not good or doing something not good, or I'm just having an unpleasant emotion because people are treating me badly, I end up shutting my brain down and body down partially in order to not feel it. That's what we do, right? For survival. And then when we do that, what happens? All these three things are what? Compromised. So if we actually go against the innate impulse to shut down, to minimize the pain, to open up the body, to expand the emotion throughout the body, then what happens? My brain, body are more available and the connection to the environment is greater. So I end up having what? Better cognition and better behavior in relation to the same situation. And I can tolerate my emotion. I don't act out impulsively. The conventional wisdom is if you have emotion, it's irrational. You need to go with behavior led by reasoning. No, here new science tells us, if you have emotion and develop a capacity for it, your behavior and reason will be more rational than otherwise, you know? So what happens is that your ability to tolerate higher levels of emotion here, the more the body you use, this is the extent of the body use, expansion in the body, the less, more tolerable it is, because here we have how difficult it is. The level of difficulty, even for higher levels of emotion, is lower when you use more of the body, when you have more support for it from outside, when you support it yourself, but most importantly, using the body as a container, yeah? So, and you can do this in different ways. Right, you can do that in different ways, but I'm noticing that the time is limited, right? So I'm going to talk about How do you go about, I just wanted to show one more thing. From the spiritual point of view, here is a model that is used in integral somatic psychology. The small circle is the physical body that goes into the coffin. The small blue circle is the subtle body of the soul. That's an energy psychology and religion. The bigger circles are the physical body of the world, right? The material of the world, the bigger blue circle is the intelligence of the world, but it turns out they're one and the same. You cannot separate a building from its blueprint physically. So it's one thing that appears as material and intelligence. But then that is what is equated with God in Jungian psychology or in Eastern religion, you know, Ishvara, you know. Now, but beyond that is the absolute collective body of pure awareness. Now, there's a lot of philosophical and scientific and empirical evidence for that. This is the non-duality, the body of non-duality. That's the basis. You are that thing in which the universe rises and falls, right? And individuals rise and fall. And that is pure awareness, right? Then what about this awareness that I have? I am my body. It's the same awareness. By design, it's constructed that way. And you're finding your ability to evolve to a point where you free yourself of this body and free yourself of even the idea of God, that I'm God, because you're the universe, right? But you can't be stuck there. You're beyond that. The basis of it is the, you know, the unchanging universe of pure awareness. How do you do that? So how do you do that is by what? In order to the most basic requirement in Hinduism, Buddhism, you know, in Sufism, Gnostic Christianity, Western alchemy, etc., is what? The ability to tolerate opposites, especially the unpleasant emotions, because that's what we avoid. If you do that, then you will find your awareness expand to include your subtle body, and then the universe, the universal consciousness. And then beyond that, you realize, there's something beyond that. And you root your awareness there and become fixated in it. And that is enlightenment. Then you get off the path of what? Infinite birth and death. That's the path of enlightenment. So whether you are embodying emotion in the body to improve cognition, relationship, etc., or emotion behavior, you know, or whether you're trying to expand your awareness to grow spiritually, the same thing is needed. You need to develop a greater capacity for emotion. And how do you go about doing that? In 4 steps, okay? And we're going to do that right now. Might as well do it right now, you know? An emotion has to have a situation. It has to be narrowly defined, right? It can't be, I'm in a bad relationship. That doesn't generate an emotion. It can at a very symbolic level, but it's more like he did not pay attention to me. He doesn't listen to me. And this is my wife's complaint all the time, right? She'll say, stop, are you taking me in? You know, it's a trick question. What do you say? You say, of course I'm taking you in. And she will say, well, what did I say? Just say, but you know, I can multitask. I usually keep a ticker tape running. So I'll just withdraw and repeat exactly what I said. But of course I was not paying attention, right? So what does it do to her? She can sense it, because we can resonate with each other, by the way. It's one of the topics. It's very important in emotional embodiment work. In order to support somebody emotionally, we need to be able to resonate with them and then know what they're experiencing in their body. We actually have a capacity to do that. I just did a training for 3 days in which I used interpersonal resonance a lot. The ability to sense what another person is feeling emotionally in one's own body is possible. Through electromagnetic energies, there's scientific research on that at short distance, but also at great distance through quantum entanglement. And I've been doing webinars, workshop online, And I can feel it, even if I don't see their body, I can feel. And then, of course, they validate that. It's not perfect, but nothing is perfect. Even what we hear is not perfect. But so that's a great way of doing, you know, on my website, you'll find a blog on attuned embodiment, which is possible even at a great distance, you know. And but then, so the situation here, we're talking about my wife telling me that you're not connecting to me. She knows that through embodiment, and by resonance, then I deny it, and that confuses her. But so that affects her badly. It makes her feel bad. So that's the emotion. Every emotion can be divided into emotions that feel good or bad. That's the valence. Feels good or bad. The other dimension of emotion, this is from the theory of emotion called the dimension theory of emotion. The other dimension is arousal. For example, anxiety is high in arousal and feels bad, right? Depression is low in arousal, it feels bad. You know, thrill, I feel very good and high in arousal, but then contentment, calmness as an emotion is what? Low in arousal and it feels good. So you can think of it. So if you don't have anything else, you can always go for whether it feels good or bad. That's where I often start. And what happens is that when I expand that in the situation, people just say, I feel bad. I don't know what emotion I feel. They tell me the details of the situation. And then I have them feel, what emotion comes? They say, I just feel bad. Okay, where does it feel bad? Where else does it feel bad? Then of course we use a lot of different techniques like expanding the body, expanding the energy to remove the energy blockages and the physical blockages we have created in our bodies, or cognitive blocks we have created, right? Behavioral blocks we have created, to expand it in the body. That is the third step, expansion and regulation of body and energy, and then the emotion, to increase the capacity of emotion, because theoretically we know that when we expand it, it feels better because it's easier to lift 50 kilogram bag with two hands than with just one hand, right? So we're going to try that now in a moment. So integration is a step where we look at it, look at how things improve in the body. Because when I'm constricting the emotion away by tightening my body, I'm reducing all kinds of vital flows of blood, lymphatic flow, you know, intercellular fluid flow and nervous system flow. I make myself more miserable than I need to be than when I allow the fear of dying to be throughout my body. After all, I'm not dying now. I'm just remembering the experience that I nearly died during my birth when I was stuck in the birth canal, right? So looking at it from time to time is the fourth step, right? And that brings more healing and more capacity. You know, when you get the PowerPoint, you can actually see, or you can go to Rajaselvam on YouTube, and look for four steps of emotional embodiment. You will be able to get to a YouTube video in case you don't happen to get this by any chance. Or you can go to my website, integralsomaticpsychology.com, and register and write to us, and then we can send this to you. Yeah, okay, that's another way to do that. If in case you don't get it, go to integralsomaticpsychology.com, register and write a letter to us asking for this PowerPoint presentation, we will send it to you, from which you get all the information. So, okay. So let's try that. Okay, let's take a situation. I'm going to take a situation, I'm going to work through it, and you do that too, right? So sit back, take a moment just to sense your body. Yeah. It turns out that you can sense emotion much more easily than what? Than body sensations. For this, why? Look at this picture. This picture is an exercise in pointillism, right? Sarol, made up of thousands and thousands of dots. Is it easier to count the dots or to see the woman with an umbrella? It's easier to see the woman with an umbrella. emotions in the body are nothing but sensations, but patterns in sensations, like the dog on the moon that we see, you know. So it's, or the faces in the cloud. It's easier to see that and then to look at the details of the cloud, details of the sensations of the body. And from that, the body abstracts another abstract image of sensations. That's the emotions. It's easier to do that, you know. So where do you feel bad in the body? So let's go back the four steps of emotional embodiment. So take a situation. So let me take a situation, right? And I have my nephew's son is a scapegoat in the family, but he's also so difficult to work with. I'm part of his homeschooling in India, right? I spend an hour with him every day. I dread it because he's so activated all the time. And in the resonance, I feel, you know, quite wiped out after I've spent an hour with him because he's so tense. So I'm going to imagine him and imagine being with him, reading the book that we're reading together. And you know what I noticed? I feel bad. My body doesn't feel good. In fact, when I notice, I can barely breathe. Yeah. So of course, unpleasant emotions are created by putting the body into a state of dysregulation. In this case, reducing my breath. In fact, some research on the physiology of emotions looks at the breath rate and different patterns in the breath, among other things. So I'm going to just notice that and notice where it is in the body first. So, you know, I feel it here. So I'm going to put my hand there, right? Not to take it away, but to make it expand, not just here, but try to expand it to the rest of the chest. By just expanding the awareness, the energy will expand. So will the distress of being with Srinath, my grandnephew. Yeah. So I'm going to actually also, I'm going to try to expand it further. It actually feels better already. That now I'm beginning to feel the stress in my kidneys. It's expanding now. That I'm able to sit with it and tolerate it, and I'm willing to expand it. Right? Usually what will I do? I'll try to not pay attention to it, go down and watch television or something, or eat chocolate, because it feels that bad, right? So I'm going to actually expand it further by going, expand it, express it a little bit. Doesn't feel good to be with this boy. Not that I'm not going to be with him, but I want to be more capable of being with him, to create a greater capacity to be with him, right? So that my body doesn't shut down whenever them. So I'm expression in the face and throat, the physiology of emotion tells me we'll expand this experience more throughout the body. Nonverbal expression will lead to nonverbal expression throughout the body. Verbal expression. Okay, so you know, I'm really hurting in the kidney, especially the left kidney. That's an emotion to the situation of being with them. That's how badly affects my well-being. It might tap into some other experience I might have had in childhood, but who cares? I'm going to stay with this situation. That insight will come to me later, but for now, I'm going to just stay with it. So not only am I feeling the distress in my chest, it's much lighter. It's more intense in my kidneys. So I'm feeling it in two places. So I'm going to express that a little bit. I don't always use expression, right? But expression is a quick way, you know, to expand it non-verbally. So, the expression gives me relief. That's why children cry, right? But here, I just don't want to get it out like in a cathartic experience. So I'm more relief there, right? The relief I'm getting is really integration, that the body, because I'm willing to go into the suffering and support it by expanding it to other places, my body feels better. Like right now, I hardly have any constriction. My breath is less, but I still feel the stress, not as much, but I also feel the stress in my kidney, right? So I'm going to, now not to forget what this is about, I'm going to reimagine Srinath, yeah, the boy being with him. You know what happens? My kidney again starts to what? Constrict and create the stress. Of course it will, but I want that. Because if I go away and soothe myself, then I've not done much of it, right? So, now what happens? The stress is starting to go into my legs, right? So it's like, now I'm sensing it in my legs. And I'm providing support here, but my intention is to, so hot. So, in fact, I'm going to require that he sits at a desk with his feet on the ground while we are on the computer reading stuff. You know, that's something that we made arrangement to do, because when he's sitting on the bed, he's not grounded enough. And then his energy distress doesn't go down. So, so it's like more places in my back beyond my kidneys are beginning to show distress, and that's fine. So I welcome it, but overall I'm feeling better. You know, I'm not feeling as though I need to run away from this situation, right? It's something that I'm doing. It's part of my service to my family, right? I'm doing it willingly, right? I know that he's carrying the family system stress. It's not just a stress. You know what? That thought before was just an idea. But when I feel it this way, it's a reality. I know that. But this is how, when you embody the emotion, the cognition becomes more embodied. You know, it's like, and in some strange way, it even makes me feel more compassionate toward this body, right? And in fact, I've been making interventions in the rest of the family system. You know, it's not easy, but something that I'm doing, you know, willingly, and you know, I'm not complaining about it, you know. Even though I'm in the middle of the writing the book, I could use it an hour for that reason. And so I'm having all these thoughts. So it becomes a more of a, it's something that I'm choosing to do. I'm okay doing, because my body is okay with it. Even though it's feeling stress here and there, and when I imagine being with him right now, it doesn't create another wave of that, because my legs have become more involved. I have more capacity to tolerate being with it, you know? So in the resonance, you know, also with other people. So that's the way you do emotional embodiment. It's not difficult to do. The theory is difficult. That's what I tell my trainees. We have trainings and workshops in integral somatic psychology. You can find the links to them on the website. You can look at the scientific basis of it in the blog articles. There are about six of them. And you can start to do this, because you have emotion, you have emotional difficulty. You will have it if you don't have it now. Buddha tells you that, right? And so try to embody it this way. And then what happens? Things resolve much more quickly. That's the efficiently, because it's not about going into the unpleasant emotion and just staying with it. Because if you do that, you might get sick. Because if I just go into my chest and go, I'm going to stay with grief, 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 guess what? You might have asthma. It's about being intelligent, knowing that's potentially a full body experience, especially the bigger emotion that is not resolved. Then by using the body, using energy, working with the blocks, expanding them, actually gets you to resolution very quickly. I can give you examples. You know, there are so many examples, because we all form symptoms at such low thresholds of suffering, because we didn't learn as children to how to be with emotions, because our parents did not know. They went through World War II and so on. So there was a woman with grief who had asthma, and I did this work where we just expanded the emotion of grief from the chest to the face a little bit. It was in very short cycles, because it kept slipping away. I didn't think much was going to come out of it. In fact, I thought I should not have chosen her. It showed they work in such poor light. But it turned out that is a great example of how quickly symptoms can transform. She no longer had asthma attacks. This is remarkable. Does she have emotional difficulty? Yes. Yeah, continues to have that, but she doesn't have to be at the edge to have such a big trauma symptom that's quite compromising of her life, right? So that's because most of us, it turns out, are forming these symptoms, psychophysiological symptoms, at low threshold of emotion, because psychology more and more has gone in the term of abstract behavior and cognition. Not that they cannot change your emotion, because they're related, but when you go to the body and you expand it, the emotion, and create a capacity for it, you have a much better way of really grabbing the real cognition, real behavior, and changing it than when you don't do it. So I'm almost done. Almost done. 2 minutes, right?
Yes, and there are some questions.
Okay. So if you go to the, you know, when you write to us for the thing, there are lots of books and all those things are there. We will also get you links to the articles here. We'll also give you a link to a video of work with fear of dying from the coronavirus in Hong Kong at the start of the pandemic that had to do with something else, right? So of course, you can get access to those things either by buying the package, right? We'll make it available through the thing that you will automatically get these things, or including this handout if they cannot get it to you otherwise, or you write to us at integralsomaticpsychology.com. Just say embodiment conference resources, embodiment conference resources. And then we'll send you this and give you the link to all these other things. Okay. So let's look at the questions here. Let's see, let me get out of the screen share.
You'll see them in the Q&A.
Yeah, chat, not chat. Oh, Q&A.
Not in Q&A.
Oh, that, I like that. I don't think that it's part of the regular Zoom. It's the
okay. Well, do you have access to it? Did you want to scan?
I do have it. Okay. Lakshmi Venkatesh writes, after we expand emotions and spread it throughout the body and expand, and then how do we work on releasing it to ensure it doesn't continue affecting us? You don't have to release it. You don't release it. You experience it and develop a capacity for it. And the brain will use it to process it for cognitive and behavioral implications. So if you need to express it, you will express it. Otherwise, it just goes away. It's information. It's not about release. Not that release is not appropriate, but very often people are so bent on, focused on release that they actually, throw the baby out of the bathwater. Notice how your cognition changes, behavior changes, and the emotion changes when you do that. That's what I would be focused on rather than releasing it. Change will come on its own, right? CT, would you handle somatic psychology different between the treatment of complex PTSD and normal PTSD? Yes and no, because there is an approach called emotion embodiment therapy. I think it's called emotion-focused therapy. They take everything, including complex PTSD as an emotional reaction. What is complex PTSD? Extreme dysregulation in the body. That's what it is. To some extent, you can actually take that dysregulation and get other parts of the body involved and brain involved. That's one way I do it. But sometimes, you know what you do? When you expand, the body gets more regulated. Or you might have to regulate it a little bit using something else, whatever you know how to do. And then you get back on the emotion track, because you can't keep expanding, dysregulate, does not always work. It works because the dysregulated body does not lead to functional behavior, cognition, emotion. So if you regulate it, it can happen, but there's no guarantee, especially because you dysregulate and then immediately soothe them. So it might not lead to the capacity building for emotions that are driving the dysregulation. Yeah. Kathy Cheshire, does sensation in the body cause thought? Does thought cause body sensation, or both? This is a very interesting question. You know, this is like nothing in the body happens without physical change. So guess what? Which is first? Thought is actually a symbolic representation of bodily change. It's just that in the brain. So it's just that we don't sense the sensations of thought as easily as sensation of love in my heart, but it's still a sensation, first sensation. It's all sensation. Doesn't matter what experience it is. It starts as a body sensation or a brain sensation. When working with trauma patients where the physical manifestations are headaches, sleep disturbances, often nervous system suppressors are prescribed while treatment is underway. Comments and your thoughts on long-term effects of nervous system suppressors. So, you know, medication is okay. We've been chewing leaves and seeds for as far as back as we know in history to regulate ourselves. So it's something else. Remember that my body is dependent on the environment too. So it's okay to have that. But if you become extremely reliant on that and don't develop a capacity for the emotions that cause the disturbance, then you'll be stuck on them. That's what you need to guard against. You know, there's some people who go on medication. It gives them enough regulation that they have capacity to process things. There are some people who go on medication, they don't, then they get hooked on the medication. So you have to make a distinction between the two. But I don't have a problem with medication, so. If holding the feeling, emotion, the same part of the body at the time, could it do damage? Yes, of course. I'll give you an example. Somebody who was doing loving kindness meditation for 1 hour a day started to develop cardiovascular symptoms, right? And then I said, meditate, but make sure that you're meditating, that you're expanding the love experience throughout the body. And that's what she started to do. So if holding, it's same thing can happen if you're just sensing one part of the body repeatedly, you could actually create neurological disturbances, you know. If holding, feeling, emotion, the same part of the body all the time, could it do damage? Yes, it can. Can lack of embodiment be a block to enlightenment? I think I've explained that, because if you don't have a capacity for, you know, the reason why we take on this body is to develop a capacity for emotions that we don't have in the soul, so that we can free our awareness from the, not only from the gross body or the physical body, but also from the subtle body, so that it can go beyond.
And we could stay and listen to this resonance all day, Raj, but we have just 30 seconds left before we need to close your session. So This resonance, this quality of resonance, of emotional resonance that you just so beautifully demonstrated with that last comment. Well, everyone, just simply breathe in this amazing presentation.
Thank you so much.
Just allow yourselves to receive the resonance of his learning, of his own embodied experience, how it translates into your learning, your potential embodied experience. And I know that you're all wanting to move on to your next schedule. I put in the portal schedule there. So please look at all the channels. This is the Coaching and Therapy channel. And we have Matthew, who is our channel host here today. So everyone wave to Matthew. But let's bow out. Let's do a bow out to dear Raj. Thank you so much. And let's give him some energy to continue his good work.
Thank you. And best of luck with the conference that just started today. I'm really impressed with what you've been able to put together. It's great.
Well, you've opened the portal wide with your work. And so thank you so much. May it continue.
Thank you, Matthew and Ali and Rosalind. And Matthew, please let me know what's possible to, you know, send to people without them needing to purchase the package, what is, and that kind of thing. So let me know.
I'll find those answers for you. Yes, thank you very much, Doctor.
Okay.
We have your information. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Bye-bye. So,
bye for now.
Thank you.
Bye.
It was excellent.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah.